You're listening to SBS On The Money with Ricardo Gonçalves.
It's your daily 10-minute business and finance news wrap for this Tuesday, the 24th of December 2024. The Australian share market rose on a shortened trading day, up 0.2%. We'll have the details with Diane College from Morgans in a few moments. But first, if you're making purchases on your credit card this silly season, experts are warning users to be up to date on the interest-free periods applied, some of which have changed recently. The latest RBA data on credit card debt shows while there was a big decline during the pandemic, it hasn't budged much from around $17.5 billion since then, with the average interest rate of 18.5% applied on interest. So what do you need to know? For more, I spoke with Sally Tindall from Canstar.
So Australians are expected to put an estimated $86 billion on their credit cards across the silly season, which is November, December and January. And it's on the back of not only Christmas spending, but the Black Friday sales, the Boxing Day sales, and of course the summer holidays. And the concern is that if people overextend themselves, they buy something, they don't have the money to pay for it, they whack it on the credit card. If they don't pay their bill on time, then they could get hit with interest charges that on average sit at around 18.51%, but can easily climb well over 20%, particularly if you've got a rewards card in your pocket.
As you alluded to, you know, we've got these cost of living pressures, but consumers are still spending. Why do you think that is?
Well, for starters, people aren't necessarily buying more things. They're just paying a lot more for the exact same items thanks to the cost of living crisis. NAB's analysis of the Black Friday sales showed that that's exactly what was happening, that there was a 4% increase in spending, but there was an actual decrease in the number of transactions. And the cost of living crisis, though, has forced a lot of families to be even savvier with their finances than perhaps they ever thought possible. And so what we know is that many households who are feeling the pinch, they're saving up for these big shopping events, whether it's Black Friday sales or Boxing Day sales. They're trying to buy essential items at a discount and moving forward or delaying purchases that they otherwise would have made in other months of the year. The problem is if you don't have the money at the time to pay for it and you put it on your credit card, the clock starts ticking very quickly and suddenly you could find yourself on a debt treadmill you can't get off, and something that should be a financial hack ends up being a complete bust.
Speaking of the clock ticking, right, credit cards offer interest-free periods. But what should consumers know about this? Because there's been some recent changes with a few of the cards, right?
Yeah, there sure has. The most common amount of time, interest-free days, that consumers typically get is 55. But if you look at the fine print, it says right next to those numbers, 55, up to 55, because it depends on where you are in your billing cycle when you make the purchase. So on a 55-day card, you could have anywhere between, say, 25 days and 55 to pay that money back. On a 44-day interest-free card, you have anywhere between 14 days and 44. And what we've seen in recent months is that two of the big four banks, CBA and ANZ, have actually pared back their interest-free day offering on their rewards cards. They were up to 55. They're now down to up to 44. And that can catch some unsuspecting cardholders up if they haven't been across the fine print this year.
That is Sally Tindall there from Canstar. Now we go to the Reserve Bank, and the RBA released its December board meeting minutes today saying it would begin relaxing interest rates should data further increase its confidence that inflation was declining. It highlighted weaker than expected wages growth, a soft quarterly result in 2.5 years, along with subdued economic growth. But just how confident is the Reserve Bank? For that, I spoke with Harry Murphy-Cruz, an economist at Moody's Analytics. Harry, so the Reserve Bank board meeting minutes for December out today. Would it be fair to say that the RBA have confirmed a bit of an easing bias, because it talks a lot about increasing confidence of inflation easing should data support it?
I think you're right. They're certainly getting more confident and comfortable that inflation is playing ball. They outline two big reasons for that. The first being that wage growth has been weaker than expected. And then the other big one just being that broader economic growth has been very, very poor. Look at it on a per capita basis. The economy has been shrinking for almost 2 years. So those two things suggest that the pressures of inflation are certainly easing, giving the board confidence. I would say, though, these are minutes for a meeting that took place 2 weeks ago. 2 weeks can be a very long time in economics, and we kind of have seen that over the last couple of weeks with that very, very strong labour market print, which, you know, unemployment dropping below 4%. That's the opposite to what the RBA wants. They want to see inflation. They want to see unemployment move higher. The fact that it's moving the opposite direction probably suggests that there's a little more caution at the RBA board than those minutes suggest.
Yeah, you've made a good point there, because if the RBA is talking about, hey, we want to see a bit more data to give us confidence, if we take a look at the really big pieces of data to come up, we've got the next labour force numbers coming in the middle of January, then you've got the inflation numbers coming at the end of the month, and then the RBA meets mid-February. So when do you expect a rate cut, and is February too early?
So, look, I think prior to that labour market print, February was certainly in play. I think, you know, a lot of the signs were suggesting the economy was slowing, and it was probably going to be a line ball for whether we saw a rate cut in February. That labour market data, combined with some pretty strong retail sales around Black Friday and heading into the holiday period, also suggests that maybe households are spending a little more than the RBA would like. The RBA are cautious. They're certainly not keen to pull the trigger too soon. So that puts May probably as the most likely cut.
Still, the IMF also said overnight in its report too that higher for longer rates and broad-based government spending cuts may be needed if inflation doesn't hit target here in Australia. What do you make of that?
Yeah, I think it's the IMF saying we really want to see monetary policy and fiscal policy work better together. Over the last little while, the RBA has kind of been the bad guy. They're the one hiking rates to bring down inflation. But you've got governments across the country, you know, state and territory and federal governments, that are a little bit looser with the purse strings. And that means that you kind of got one foot on the accelerator, one foot on the brake to sustainably bring down inflation, to bring it back to that target band. You need those two things working together. I think that's what the IMF is saying here, because if we don't, then certainly we could be in a world where interest rates have to stay higher for longer.
And finally, next year is going to be very interesting for the Reserve Bank, because it'll be the first time it'll be split into two. We'll have one board looking after interest rates, another looking after governance. But I think it happens after the first meeting, so it'll happen in March. What do you think will be their biggest challenges in the new year?
Yeah, exciting times. You know, new board members coming in, a change in the way that the board operates, all of those things are very, very exciting. I would say, though, you know, monetary policy is difficult at the best of times. It's really, really hard in an uncertain environment. You know, uncertainty, I think, is going to be the main theme of 2025 when President Trump returns to the White House. Tariffs, what does China look like? What kind of support and stimulus do officials in China put through to the economy? All of those things have big impacts for Australia. And so we're going to need to see a board that is quite nimble to some of these global events. And I think the structure with those two separate boards does allow that to take place.
It's Harry Murphy Cruz there from Moody's Analytics.
Now, Market Day on the SBS On The Money podcast.
It was a shorter trading day because it's the day before Christmas. So the S&P ASX 200 finished trade just after 2 o'clock, up 0.24%, 8,220. For more, I spoke with Diane College, a private client advisor at Morgans.
Today we're looking at a follow-on from yesterday's good returns delivered across the board. So we had a very strong lead out of the US, and we're looking to have that followed on today and hopefully for the other trading days to end the rest of the year. We had good returns out of the tech sector, particularly Meta, Tesla and Nvidia, which were all up between 2.3% and 3.7% in the session. And I think that's what's driving our markets today. And plus, I think I know we're going to talk about the Santa rally later in the program, but we're just fingers crossed this is the start of it.
The RBA minutes are out. It was the last RBA meeting of the year. They seem to suggest that the RBA is prepared to start cutting interest rates should they continue data to increase their confidence that inflation's falling. What's the market betting in terms of when we'll see the first interest rate cut?
Well, the actual RBA minutes were quite dovish this month, which has pushed out the expectations for interest rate cuts earlier in the year. We're looking at expectations dropping from 62% to 52% for a Feb 18 rate cut. Looking forward to the April meeting, it still doesn't look exactly promising. However, as a house, we are anticipating some downward movement in interest rates, definitely by the August meeting.
How much does that have to do with where the Australian dollar is? It's holding at a 2-year low. Why?
Well, the Australian dollar weakness can be attributed to a number of different factors, including the strength of the US currency more than anything, really. This is due to the ongoing expectations of a lower number of interest rate cuts in their economy. So, as their economy remains strong, it allows a lot of money to flow into that sector of the market versus the AU dollar. So the way I sort of explain it to my clients is that it's like a set of scales. So as one currency goes up, the second currency goes down. And that's what we're looking at the moment. And plus, we do have a lot of weakness in our commodity prices, which are not helping our Australian dollar at the moment.
Okay, so you mentioned the term Santa rally a few moments ago. Did we get one this year? Because there was a lot of optimism following the US presidential election. We saw a little bit of a pullback then in December. What was the overall result?
I think, interestingly, I actually mentioned the Santa rally last time we caught up, but we haven't seen it as yet, unfortunately. We're still hoping for it. Just reverting back to a couple of facts, the S&P has gained in December about 75% of the time since 1950, and that increases to 83% in a US election year. So hopefully what we're going to see is the last couple of trading days remain positive, and that will conclude into a Santa rally for 2024.
And what do you see as the major themes for 2025? Just how optimistic are you given what we've seen so far this year?
Well, we're actually very positive on equity markets in 2025. As a house, we're overweight global equities, particularly US exposure, as we see Trump as a positive for driving markets forward. We're accessing that growth through either buying individual stocks or we're buying ETFs. And there's a couple I can mention that look like they cover the broader market, particularly in the US. QSML, which is offered by VanEck, and that's the quality small cap ETF. We've got HYGG, which is the Hyperion Global Growth Fund, and that has great exposure to the bigger names in the tech sector, as well as a number of different other sectors in the US market. And finally, we like Munro Global Growth in that sector as well. The other thing that I'll be looking to do is add to both India and China. And again, I'll be doing that through some ETFs. In China, I like the iShares top 50 companies, which is IZZ, and the VanEck China exposed ETF, which is called CNEU. And in India, BetaShares has a top 50 as well, which is IIND, and VanEck has GLIN. Both markets we expect will show some growth, and that's particularly to offset any tariffs that are lobbed by Trump in the US. So, with a domestic focus, we are overweight Australian equities as well. And particularly when we drill down to a sector-specific overweight positions, we're in diversified financials. We are underweight banks and telcos, and we're basically neutral on all other sectors of the market, but we still do believe that our market will perform quite well in 2025.
That's Diane College from Morgans. And don't forget to subscribe to the SBS On The Money podcast wherever you stream your podcasts from.
This SBS On The Money podcast is provided for informational purposes only. The content on this podcast should not be understood as constituting advice or a recommendation. It is not personal advice and does not consider your personal circumstances or objectives. You should contact a licensed professional before making any financial decision.